Sleepy Eyes, Todd, all alone at the top of the lane. Blue Harbor taking up chase from second. Fight on third, and here they come into the stretch. It is Sleepy Eyes, Todd, full of run today. Much the best here in the Boss Cap. Leading by seven inside the 16th pole, and he's gone. Give it to the gray. Sleepy Eyes, Todd, with Quincy Hamilton.
You're listening to the Thoroughbred Post on the Equisport Radio Network. Brought to you by Ballyrose, your full-service South Florida farm. On today's special edition, we look at the past, present, and future of one of our favorite race tracks, Fauna Park. And now from Ballyrose Farm, here's our host, Les Saltzman.
Thanks and welcome to the show. Folks, last year at this time, it felt like the lights were going out most evenings, but there was a flicker of light coming from Grand Island, Nebraska. It was the voice of track announcer Steve Anderson. Yep, while everybody else was closed, Fauna Park was open and racing and kind of keeping us going. Now, a year later, the lights are brighter and the world's changed, and Fauna has got an evolutionary future. We're going to put this spotlight on the 5/8 mile track and find out a little bit more. But before we bring on Racing Secretary Doug, I'm tongue-tied today, Doug Shoup, I want to give a shout-out to one of the track's biggest fans, Colton Reimden. Colton, who's 8 years old, and along with his mom and family, celebrate his birthday there every year, and he even has a race named after him. So that kind of tells us a lot about the track, Doug. You've been there for quite a while. It's still a family place, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very much a family place. And also supported by, the smaller town, Grand Island of 50,000 people, and all the surrounding towns. It's a pretty small place, but it's well supported.
And you've been there for a number of years, right?
Yeah, I actually have been here since 1980.
That's a number of years.
Yes, it is.
And you were at Canterbury part of that time as well, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I was at Racing Secretary at Canterbury for 20 years, actually. I also worked Fauna Park for those years also, and from Fauna Park I'd go to Canterbury and do Canterbury Park for 20 years.
And actually, Chris Katulak just jumped on the line with us. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Les. Thanks for having me on. I just saw Doug the other day, so I know Doug's doing well. We're supposed to be on our days off, but there really are no such thing of that ilk once the racing season starts.
Well, I know that's one of the reasons why I wanted to get both of you on, because I know you work really hard to put on a real quality card almost every night every day that you're racing. And it's got to be a little bit difficult, I would think, with all that's going on.
Yeah, well, specifically all that's going on right here at Fauna Park in Grand Island. This past Saturday, we had a national alpaca show in one of our livestock facilities we have on the west side of the parking lot. In our 6,000-seat arena, we had a weekend-long junior wrestling youth tournament, and then also in our racetrack concourse, we had over 100 Harleys and the associated folks that come along with those that came all onto the Fauna Park campus over the weekend, and it was quite a production, I'll tell you that. So Doug's racing office crew has their chores, and my cleaning crew and my concession crew and security and everybody else, we were spread pretty thin. But what it meant was, Les, we had the second best day in handle that we've had in the last 3 years.
Well, that's the amazing thing. What you guys did during the early part of the pandemic of keeping this signal going, and people that never knew of the racetrack became fans. But you've kept the momentum going. And you've had some tough weather there and everything else, but you're continuing to grow. And then on the horizon, you've still got something even more exciting coming up.
Well, yeah, I think so. If you're talking about the casino gaming, that certainly is on the horizon. That's going to require a lot of attention and expense for sure. But we're hopeful, and I know Doug will use this as a good tool to do the best recruiting he can. We're looking to essentially double our purse money here over the next couple of years.
Well, and that's going to be great. Doug, if I could, you know, as a former trainer, one of the first things I always do when I go to a racetrack website is I go to the horseman section and I look at the condition book. And I got to tell you, as the horseman, you're probably one of my five favorite authors because you write a horseman's condition book.
Well, we try to write, we write a lot of conditions, and we also try to write for everything that we have on the grounds. We do have some cheaper claimers, quite a few of them, in fact, but writing conditions for those cheaper claimers, you know, that will make bigger fields, and hopefully the bigger fields makes better handle for the track.
Well, as
and
a horseman,
keep in mind that the purses that we're offering right now for those lower claimers, which is basically the bread and butter of our race meet, is we've been able to scratch out what I think is more than satisfactory purse money for a $3,500 claimer, a $5,000, or a $2,500 claimer with zero casino money. This is the result of 1 year of mutual handle that is derived from, of course, what we handle throughout the course of our live meet, but then simulcasting the rest of the year on Kentucky Derby Day, the Classics, Breeders' Cup Day. We have a big handicapping, a national handicapping contest the end of January that's part of the NHC Tour that we didn't have this year because of COVID. But all of that goes into the purse money for the next year's condition book. And, I mean, we're offering $4,000 purse money for $2,500 claimers. Now, a $4,000 purse is not much, but it's pretty darn nice for a $2,500 claimer. And it's almost like smoke and mirrors that we're doing here to pull this off.
Well, but what you are doing is you're keeping a lot of small trainers going. You know, if somebody's got a $2,500 horse with some conditions and Doug's writing a book where he can go through those conditions and run every 3 or 4 weeks, you know, by the end of the meet, you know, they've had a chance to at least stay above water. And that's become very unusual.
Yeah, right. We do what we can for the horsemen as best as we possibly can, and we have not announced our casino operator. We don't, you know, we've eliminated no one at this point, and we are doing scratching and clawing for every nickel we can to give towards the horsemen, because Fauna Park is about horse racing and the ag industry that fortifies it. And I want to see us back, and I know Doug does as well. Back in the 80s and 90s here, early 90s, we were in our heyday here at Fauna Park, and holy cow, did we have a tremendous product to offer at that time, and I'd love to get back to something similar to that.
Well, I think you're getting yourself positioned for that. And Doug, if I can just go back to you for a second. Chris mentioned a lot of the excitement that the track had in the 80s and 90s, but you've been able to maintain kind of a roster of trainers that have been with you for a very, very long time.
And yeah, it's been pretty fortunate that way. You know, we have several trainers here that, you know, that branch out to other states when they leave here. And we have, you know, trainers that always come back to Fauna Park. They love Fauna Park. It's a good place to get their horses ready to run. And hopefully, in the future, these trainers won't have to leave and go to other states and race. We'll have a good enough product that we can hold these trainers here and keep them with us year-round and have a regular, you know, have a good racing circuit where they can just stay in this state.
Well, back when you started, you know, the Nebraska circuit, and you know this better than I do, obviously, the Nebraska circuit was a decent circuit, you know, and somebody could race 9-10 months of the year,
correct.
If I remember correctly. You know, and it would be nice, I guess, if you don't have to travel all over the place. And it's interesting when you look at past performances of horses running at Fawner, you've got folks that are literally in the four corners of the world, you know, and then they emerge at Fawner. It would be nice if those folks had some stability.
Yeah, that's what we're going to try to do is try to get a circuit going and get back to where we can run a certain amount of days in the year, keep everyone in the state, where we can run for some decent purses and get the quality of racing back to what it was.
Now, is it going to be a unique challenge to you because you're going to have new faces that you're going to try and get in, but you're going to need to keep some of the old faces pretty happy?
It really isn't, because the people that we have, you know, if the purses go up, which they will, and the trainers, they'll upgrade their stock. We'll keep the same, most of the same trainers, hopefully some new ones, but everybody will upgrade their stock and try to be competitive. They have to stay in the business.
And that's throughout the country. We're seeing that, you know, you've got to improve your stock. You can't stay static any longer. When the casino opens, Chris, you had mentioned that the focus is always going to be kind of an ag focus, both on horse racing and the exhibition hall and all the other things that you folks do at that facility. Is that a challenge?
Well, staffing is a challenge. I don't care whether you're running a printing shop, a racetrack, a casino, a bank, whatever. It's hard to get people to come to work and have a good work ethic. That's why I love that we've got, we're probably the largest employer of 70-plus age people in Nebraska. We've got people that come here and they do a good job, and that's terrific. But the younger set, they just don't have that gumption to go out and work. And so staffing is a big deal. We this wrestling tournament that we had was turned into a bit of a fiasco. The wrestling tournament, it was a two session deal by day, and the first session ran 2 hours longer than was supposed to, and the cleaning crew we had lined up for the evening, there were issues there, but that's just one little grain of sand of what a CEO has to contend with. But We believe that the new casino, when it's up and hitting on all cylinders, is going to employ at least 350 people. And so those could potentially be that many new people coming to town. Well, of course not. There'll be people that are in town that will look to find a job in the casino industry here. But we have less than 3% unemployment in Grand Island. And so that's just one of the hills and valleys of trying to put on a show that we are doing here, and you know we asked for this to come our way. We were hoping that we would get some sort of salvation as far as gaming to be competitive, and now we have it, and so now we have to work with it. That's the best way I can say that.
Well, you and I have spoken a number of times, and I know you have a huge commitment to the facility and to Nebraska racing. So if anybody's going to make it work, I'm sure you guys are. And Doug, as I said, and I want to ask you just one more question, and I'll let you guys go, because we've got a pretty full slate of Fawner folks. Right after you, we've got Jake Oles. I always mess his name up.
Olesak. Close. You were on the way. You almost got Olesak.
Olesak and Kelly Martinez to talk with us about how it is racing there. But Doug, the question I have for you is, going forward, do you feel that, like, the bottom horses, the 2,500 horses, do they drop off quickly? Is that something that you graduate out of? Because I've seen that happen at racetracks before, and, you know, they start writing the casino condition book, I always call it, and, you know, they go from horses racing non-winners of four of a lifetime for 2,500 to a bottom of 6,250. And, you know, it's sometimes the horsemen get kind of in a jackpot there.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I don't really care where you're at. You have to write the races for the type of horses you have. So whether you can, you know, you can make your bottom 2,500 or you can make your bottom 6,500, but it's same horses. So you just kind of have to see what kind of quality you have on the grounds, and you have to write for the type of horses you have on the grounds. We're not trying to eliminate the bottom horses. We're trying to maybe upgrade the bottom horses somewhat. We don't want to eliminate anybody. We just want new people to get in the business and hopefully get some a little bit better horse.
Well, you know, that's the healthy mentality. And one of the reasons why I'm so intrigued by the racetrack, you guys have just the right – the right outlook and the right philosophy to make this thing work for everybody involved. And as a horseman myself, I love it because you don't see it that often anymore. It's you're not as corporate as some of the other racetracks.
Well, that's for sure. We are very homespun. We're quite a little niche here of the people in the racing community, but our community of Grand Island in central Nebraska, the things that they do for the love of their horse racing is just out of this world. Any flat screen TV that you see in our clubhouse was not purchased by Fauner Park. It was purchased by a season table holder that said, hey, if I go and buy a couple flat screens, will you swap out these old 1972 TVs for some new? And of course we will, and we do. And they're happy to do it. They don't bat an eye. They don't take possession of that TV and say, give me the remote now. They just know that Fauner does not have this money growing, you know, in our backyard, and that's all part of the community effort. That and all the corporate sponsorship, it just goes on and on. But anyway, we are a family here, and I know Jake and Kelly can attest to that when you ask them about how we spin all the plates here and keep it going.
Chris, before you got on the air, on the intro, we talked about a young man named Colton Rideman, who is an 8-year-old. And his mom wrote to us when she found out we were doing a show about Fauner and said that Colton's been coming to the racetrack since he's 8 months old. And every year they celebrate his birthday at the racetrack. And the last 4 years they've sponsored a race with his name on it. And that's exactly what you're talking about. It's that community family that's behind the track, and you don't see that in many places anymore.
Oh, no, and we still do the blanket presentation, so Colton probably had his name on a blanket that might be on a horse in the shed row walking, you know, being walked right now. We have town days, the nearby towns, Aurora, Giltner, Ashton yesterday, it was Ashton Day, St. Paul Day, and they bring throngs of people that come to the races. In fact, now we have to have Ashton Day on top of Giltner Day or something, and you have two sets of blanket presenters in the race at one time. What racetrack in the world has that kind of community support? None, other than Fauner Park.
No, that's great. You're just going to need to get more race dates.
Well, we are here to share. We don't want to be greedy. There are others in the state that need to put on their racing product for the horsemen in a fair and equitable way, and we know where our slice is, and we're happy to retain that.
Well,
did I say that right, Doug? Is that yeah, meaning your philosophy?
Yeah, we got to take care of the whole state, take care of Fauner Park, and we got to make sure that the rest of the state has racing dates, and we can get a whole season back to going like we used to have.
Well, I admire what you guys are doing, sincerely. For a guy that's been in the business for 40 years, I just appreciate it, and keep going. And anything that this show can ever do to help you, you just let me know.
Thank you. We appreciate your effort, for sure.
And right now we've got on deck Jake. Jake, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, You heard some of the interview that we had with Chris and Doug, and the spirit at Fauner Park, and you're a guy that is local, right?
Yeah, you know, I live just south of Lincoln, Nebraska, so about an hour and a half from Grand Island.
Now, so you're still living in the Lincoln area?
Yep, I live in First Nebraska. It's, like I said, it's about a half hour south of Lincoln.
And I found out that during the week you wear not only a jock's helmet but another hat. Tell us about what you do when you're not riding.
Yeah, you know, I also work at an ethanol plant. It's in Adams, Nebraska. I'm actually a supervisor there, so most of the time it's during the week. I work nights, but a lot of times it's not. I'll have to work two jobs at once. It's a little bit difficult at times, but I try to make it work. You know, I have three daughters and a wife, so they tend to cost a lot of money. So I got to do what you got to do to make ends meet.
Well, you obviously have to love racing, because
yeah, and that's just it. You know, I mean, I tell everybody all the time. You know, I do make plenty of money at my SNL job. It's a great job, but this horse racing and you know, the people, like you guys talked about it, it just brings you back to it. You know, it's just such a good atmosphere. It's just like you're not working. You know, you come here on the weekends and a lot of times during the week too, and you're just with, like you said, a whole racetrack family, and y'all just have a good time, not only with the racing, but you know, there's other things going on all the time, whether it be bowling or golfing or sports. I mean, there's just a lot of different aspects that Nebraska racing has that people enjoy.
How'd you get into it?
Well, I actually got into it originally from, we have a small county fair. I grew up in Minnesota. My great-grandpa was into it. And, you know, that was just a small scale of it, you know, just racing at the little county fair. And then my older brother, Jordan, started racing at Canterbury Park and stuff.
Now,
and
I remember him riding at Canterbury.
Yep. And I shouldn't say he started riding. He started grooming, you know, at first. And so I kind of followed him along, and then eventually started riding, and then followed him along, and he showed me the ropes, and that's just kind of how it all started, really.
And so you moved to Nebraska and kind of got hooked on the situation there, huh?
Yeah, well, what happened there was the same thing. My brother came to Nebraska, and I followed him over, and then my wife is originally from Lincoln, so I met her and got married a couple years later, and we built a house in First Nebraska, and that's where we're at now, and we wouldn't want to be anywhere else, that's for sure. We really like Nebraska. It's a great, great place to raise a family, that's for sure.
Now, how old are the girls?
11, 7, and 2.
Okay, so you've got quite a spread there.
Yeah, yep, for sure. And we talk about having another one, but nothing yet, but we sure want it sometime.
Well, you got another 3 years, right? You do it every 5 years? Is that about it?
That's right.
Okay.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about what it's like trying to balance your riding and your other professional career. Because to me, switching gears like that has to be kind of a challenge.
Yeah, you know, it really is. Before it really was, because, you know, I was here, before I started the ethanol plant, I was here 7 days a week, getting on horses. I kind of pride myself. I get on a lot of horses in the morning. I mean, I used to get on 20, 30 a day. So from going to that to not being here some days, it was kind of hard. You know, the trainers didn't really understand. And but, you know, it's gotten to the point now where as long as I let the trainers know, I ride for a lot of different trainers, but I would want to say the main guys I ride for, you know, like our Dave Anderson and Marby Johnson. And like I said, there's a few other guys, but they really understand and know, you know, why I do it, I guess. And as long as I'm telling when I'm going to be there and what's going on, they're normally pretty good with it. And that kind of goes both ways too with the ethanol plant. They kind of know what days I'm going to be there and how it works. And they both work with me so well now. So that's just how I'm able to balance it as good as I am now.
Now, I looked at the entries this weekend. You wrote just about rode the card Friday and Saturday,
yep.
And yesterday you had a bunch too. You got to be exhausted.
I had two races off all weekend. It was not a very good weekend for winning races, but I did ride a lot. Kind of had some bad luck on a few races and stuff, but there's weeks like that. You know, last week we run 2 days, and I win seven out of I think maybe 18 or 19 races, and this week it was not good at all. So it's just that's part of the battle with racing. You got to keep your head up and keep grinding, no matter if you're doing good or bad.
You know, that's the whole thing, and you can't look at just the minute. You got to look at the bigger picture. You know, but you know. Riding as many races as you rode and then jumping back up and going to work, how do you do it? Do you sleep?
Yeah, that's very, very difficult. And this week was kind of a rough one for that. You know, like Friday night, like you said, I rode every race, and then I was got in the car and slept for about 2-3 hours while my wife drove me, and went to work all night. I ended up using a little vacation time, got off early and slept for another couple hours on the way down, and got on horses for a couple hours. Then I slept for an hour and went to ride races. So it's a little hard to turn it off and on like that, but kind of got to do what you got to do, I guess.
And then you've got the girls, and people will tell me, you're an exceptional father. I mean, they say you're very involved with your kids. It's amazing that you have the energy to do it. You know, you just tell me about what you did. I'm starting to get ready for a nap.
Yeah, like you said, on top of this now, you know, my daughters are into sports, you know, and of course, you know, I grew up playing sports, and I grew up having my parents involved in sports. So I try to coach as many of their teams as I can, and it gets difficult at times, but my middle Ellie, she's in softball and basketball, and I help coach both of them. So it's every day during the week now, it's some kind of sporting activity for a couple hours as well. So you know, and they always come to the races. They always support me, and there's like, you know, with the family environment at the track and with everything going on, it just, you know, you come back off the horse and to see your daughters there and all these other kids there. You have, I don't know, I mean, sometimes hundreds of kids waiting there for goggles or for, you know, just a simple high five. I mean, it just makes us go back out every race and want to do it again.
You know, it sounds so, again, I don't mean to sound goofy, but so old school. But that's what our sport really needs. Just what you guys are doing, you know, getting young people involved.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, there's like I said, there's no better feeling than having all them kids out there, and it's just the family environment, and just that's what it's all about. I mean, exactly what you said. I mean, just seeing the smiles on everybody's faces and everybody's having a good time.
And you know, doesn't that come back to you too? You know, as a professional, you know, you just feel good about what you're doing, and then it comes back. You know, when you go home, you're feeling better about everything. So I think it's a complete cycle. You know, I'm not that smart, so I don't know, but it seems to me like it's almost a complete cycle.
Oh yeah, you're definitely right, and not only that, you know, I remember when I was a kid doing the same thing these young kids are doing now, and you look back, it's like, yeah, I mean, that's, like you said, it's a complete cycle, and you hope you're making a kid's day or a family's day, so maybe one day they'll be, you know, doing the same thing. I mean, maybe one of them kids might be a rider someday. You never know, I guess. And if we can inspire people to do something like that, I mean, we're doing our job, I guess.
Now, do any of the girls look like they're interested?
Well, that's all my daughters. That's all they want to do is ride horse and come to the races. You know, they're pretty upset if they don't get to come to the races on weekends. And then, you know, like you said, we're good friends with a lot of the trainers here. So afterward, we'll go back to the barns, and you know, it's that's all they would talk about. We want to ride a horse. And there's pony horses here and stuff that they can, you know, kind of sit on or whatever, or, you know, just have a good time. Yeah, I mean, I know what kind of job the racetrack is as far as being a rider. You know, there's struggles too, you know. I mean, we got to make weight. We got to, you know, there's definitely some struggles in it. So I don't not encourage them to be jockeys, but, you know, I let them know how it is too. You know, it's not always the easy part of it too. So, but so my one daughter's really tiny. So I could sure see her wanting to do it for sure.
You know, when my son was younger, he wanted to be a rider, and I just made sure he ate so much food. Yeah. So he would grow too tall and too big. Cause you know, I would imagine, and you know what? Your parents probably discussed this with you. As a parent, watching your kid ride, it's got to be a little nerve-wracking, but kind of very satisfying at the same time.
Right. You know, it's a dangerous job. I mean, we're going 40 miles per hour around there, and a lot of times you have 9 different horses around you. So not only your horse you got to worry about, you got to worry about all the others. So. You know, and injuries happen, stuff happens out there. I guess we just put faith in each other and faith in God, I guess, that we're going to make it around there every time. But it's definitely a dangerous job. So you got to love it, that's for sure.
Now, was your wife in the business before you met her?
Yeah, and she still owns some horses. When I met my wife, she was, I don't know how familiar you are with it, but she was a pony girl, which they ride the ponies that take the racehorses to the gates. She did that, and she trained some horses and stuff, but she now runs a salon in Lincoln, so she's not the only part of it. I guess she's in it now. She owns a few horses and doesn't run a whole bunch around here at this point, but she raised some Minnesota breds and stuff, so they run at Canterbury Park in Minnesota and stuff and different places like that.
I was going to ask if she was tough to ride for.
I always tell her I hate riding, you know, her own horses because, yeah, it is kind of difficult.
Especially that long ride home.
Every owner always wants to win, of course. So, yeah, it's a little bit more difficult at times.
But she – good, I'm sorry.
What's that?
No, you were about to say something. I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, I didn't. You can go ahead.
So it sounds like even though it's a really full and hectic life, you're really enjoying yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't want to do anything else, you know. I mean, like I said, it's almost like living two lives. You got your ethanol plant job at home, and then you go to work, and you go to the racetrack, and it's almost like a thrill life, you know. And you're just like you said, it's not even like a job. You're just enjoying it, and the whole family, and it's just I wouldn't want to do anything else. It's a fun life.
Well, keep enjoying it. Stay safe, and we hope that you continue to have the great success, and we're going to be following Fawner because, again, I'm hooked on it. During last March, I started watching, and I said, boy, this reminds me of when I started to train, and, you know, where there was that family feeling, and, you know, all the riders kind of knew each other, and, it's just nice. So we're going to be keep watching, and hopefully we get to have you back on the show once in a while.
Yeah, for sure. That sounds great to me, and I appreciate you having me, for sure.
Well, we appreciate what you're doing. We'll talk to you soon. And we've got Kelly Martinez on line two. So, Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you heard that guy talk, right? He seems like he's having a good time. How about yourself?
Yeah, we have a good time over here at Fawner.
Now he has the same kind of situation going in reverse. his wife owns some horses that he rides for, that he rides. And you train some horses, and your husband, Armando, he rides a bunch of them.
Yep, yep.
And, you know, sometimes that's difficult, Jake was saying. How about for you guys?
Yeah, it does. You know, we run into problems once in a while. That, you know, everything that I train, Armando has to ride, or if he doesn't ride them, he has to sit out the race. Unless we have entries, then, of course, I can have two different riders. But, yeah, we come into problems sometimes with that. And, you know, I've got to be reasonable about it, too. I try to help as much as I can. You know, if he's got a situation where, you know, he has a horse that I don't think I can outrun, or, you know, that I can help him out and he wants to ride the other one, I'll pass and sit out or find a different spot if we can.
Now, he never tries to spin you, right?
No, no, no. He just says, I mean, he, you know, we talk about it, you know, when he has calls and stuff, but, you know, it most of the time works out okay.
Now, you've been training for quite a few years out there, and your last 5 or 6 years have been outstanding.
Yep, that's right. We, you know, we always just stayed in Nebraska and ran Nebraska and went over to Iowa, but mostly we just did the Nebraska circuit because our kids were in school and doing sports and that kind of thing, and used to be we had several more days in the state of Nebraska and you could just kind of make a living here. And, you know, we raised our family and just kind of put our priorities in line. And my son graduated in 2015. My daughter graduated in 2010. And, you know, and Armando, he was always a great father. You know, he always wanted to be around, see his kids participate and, you know, have the family type surroundings. So, and that's what you could do in Nebraska, you know, when we ran time. But once our kids graduated and everything and the races, the days got cut, we started going outside the state and everything. And then when we lost Exarban, that was a big blow. And then when we lost Lincoln, of course, that was a big blow. So we had to move outside the state, and our family bought a farm in Kentucky. And we just had to go down there and kind of up our game so we had a place to run kind of year-round, because the owners can't afford to pay just, you know, to run the Nebraska circuit and that's it. So I accredit that for a lot of our success.
Because you almost automatically had to upgrade.
Yes, yeah. When you left the state and went Iowa, Kentucky, you know, that direction, you know, you have to upgrade to compete. So that's what everybody kind of jumped aboard, and everyone saw the situation, and that's what our owners stayed behind us, and that's what happened.
Well, that's kind of going to position you pretty well. We were talking to Doug earlier in the show, and he mentioned, you know, that once the casinos come there, that the quality of stock might need to improve. So you may have a little bit of a jump there.
Yeah, well, that's definite. You know, wherever they have money, wherever there's money in the purses, you have to be ready to run, you know, and that's one thing we learned, you know, it just ain't going to be a comfortable situation. You're going to have to go with the times to compete.
Now, the farm in Kentucky, do you get down there much, or?
We go there after we run in Iowa, which now that Iowa has that mixed meet, we get back in October, and we stay there from October to January. And, you know, we have horses there, and there's a guy that works for me down there, and we have, you know, stalls and inside arena and a wheel, and, you know, we kind of get the base stuff on horses that we need to take back and switch in and out, you know, so that way we can kind of keep them all, you know, in training until we can get them to the track. So
that's a nice environment because you can freshen them up and get them geared to the meet you want to go to.
Yep. We can rotate horses a little bit. So like right now we have a lot of the, you know, obviously the Nebraska breds here. And we just started, you know, getting the Iowa breds, you know, cranked up and ready to go here about a month ago. And, you know, and then when Nebraska's finished, then they'll kind of go home and wait, and we bring in the others. And yeah, it helps. I tell you what, it helps to have a place to keep everything rolling. So
now, how did you meet Armando?
We met in Lincoln, Nebraska, and it would have been 86, 87.
And at the racetrack, or?
Yep, at the racetrack. My parents owned horses, and I was still in high school. I was 16, and Armando was there, and actually Armando and my sister were friends. And my sister said, "Hey, I found a guy I want you to marry." And then she introduced us, and that was the way it went. So he was 19 and I was 16.
So you were like childhood sweethearts almost.
Yep, almost. That's right. Our second date, he told me he was going to marry me, but I just kind of laughed about that. But that's what happened.
Now, was he race riding at that time?
Yeah, he started in, I believe, 86, and then in 87, he came to Nebraska, and he was in California, went out to Wyoming, and then hooked up with a guy named Ardell Saylor, and Ardell Saylor brought him to Nebraska.
The reason I was asking, because, you know, on the second date, you know, he said he was going to marry you, but you kind of realized he was a jock, and you kind of put that away, right?
Well, yeah, well, you know,
isn't that the way that works usually?
Well, yeah, that's, you know, we just kind of, I was in high school and he was at the track, and, you know, we just came every, you know, few times when my parents' horses run, you know, so I was just like, yeah, right, you know, but yeah, we started dating and made it work. So he came and saw me, and we went back and forth, and went to the races a little more than when the horses were in, you know, so. And then at summertime, I worked at the track, you know, for different trainers, you know, when I was in high school. So, yeah, that's the way we kept together, so.
And he stayed the course, which you got to give him credit for, right?
Yep, he stayed on track.
And so the kids, tell us about the kids.
My daughter is Victoria. And she is now married, and she lives in Colorado. Her husband rode bulls and stuff, and he does kind of like the Colorado circuit out there. So he kind of liked the racing with the horses. I guess, you know, he couldn't get the bulls out of the system, and my daughter decided, you know, they were just going to move out there. And she is a office manager at a dental office. And they're expecting their first child in October. So
will that be your first grandchild?
Yep, that'll be our first grandkid. And then my son Damien, when he got out of high school, he became my husband's jock agent. So he hustles his book, and he has a girlfriend. Her name's Alexis Burkhart. They've been together for going on 7 years. So. She helps me in the shed row, so she kind of took over the second command type position and helps me run things back there. So, and of course, they move right along with us, you know, track to track and then back to Kentucky. So, and when my son ain't hustling book, then he is my assistant trainer.
Nice. So it's really a family operation.
Oh, yeah. Yep. It goes the whole thing. And, you know, and that's like my my sister and her husband and my nephew, they come up on the weekends and help in the barn for some extra help. And, I mean, it is. It's from top to bottom. My mom, she stayed back in Kentucky and kind of overseen what was happening when we came up here in January. So everything, yeah, from top to bottom, it's a whole family operation.
You know, and I'm repeating myself to the earlier part of the show, but that's one of the things that has attracted me to Fonner so much. When I came up, you know, and I've been in the business 40-some-odd years, you know, that's how the racetracks were all over the place, but a lot of that's disappeared. But you guys have kept that together and kept that going, and it's just a great thing.
Yeah, I tell you what, I remember, you know, in 89 and 90s, it was every Sunday. It was potluck, who came to whose house to grill. I mean, there was always everybody. I mean, it took a village. Everybody raised everybody's kids, you know. They all ran together. They grew up, you know. It was, I mean, it was a really close-knit thing. And that's like when Nebraska started losing their tracks, you know, and everybody had to move out, you know. There was the Von Hamels, you know. I mean, it just, as far as that, you know, everybody just went their separate ways. And the one thing is everywhere you go, there isn't that close-knitness. Like, there is still kind of the home base in Nebraska.
Which is great. It's funny. It's kind of ironic. So being in the business as long as we have, the two of us, we've seen so many racetracks close, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But some of the friends and that family that you were just talking about that I had back in the 80s and 90s, we're all still really close with each other.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That's, you know, and it's an amazing thing.
Yeah, whenever you go and you run into the, you know, the Gleasons, the Von Hamels, I mean, the Donlins spread out a little bit, but they come to Fauner a bit yet, you know. But, I mean, clear back in them days, it's no matter where you go, shoot, you know, it's kind of like when you go to Kentucky or whatever and we run into the Von Hamels or like Tom Vanberg, you know, I seen him, you know, this winter. He shipped into Turfway a little bit and Churchill, you know, it's still, you can go to them people and they always seem to, if they can help you out or you need help or you can help them, we're always there to have each other's backs, you know.
And the amazing thing is the conversation that you have is just a continuation of the one that you had with them 18 years ago.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's comforting in a crazy world that we're in. Isn't that comforting?
Yes, it is. It is. You know, there's something about, I don't know, you know, and that's like Armando, he lived in California for all them years. And when he came to Nebraska, that was the first thing he said. He goes, I've been all over. He said, but I'm going to tell you what, we're going to raise our family in Nebraska. You know, he said, there's just something about Nebraska. It feels safe, you know, and people are good to people here, you know. So I always will say, you know, Kentucky's wonderful. I love to be there. I like to go different places. We don't have problems. I mean, everybody treats us good, but there's some about when you come back to, you know, Grand Island to Fauner, back to Nebraska, you just feel good.
Yeah, if, you know, I think in situations like that, you just feel safe there, right?
Yep, that's right.
This is home. You know, this is home, and this is where. And look, we have plenty of crazy people. You know, I always say the reason they put those fences on the racetrack is not to keep the people from getting in. It's keeping us from getting out. you know, so we've got our own issues, but they're family issues.
Yeah.
And family stays together.
That's right.
Yeah. So now, with the casino situation, do you think things are going to change a lot or a little, or what do you think?
Oh, you know what? I've been a lot of places where there's casinos, and you know, people are afraid of this and that, whatever, but I'm telling you, I don't think so, because everywhere that I've been that they've had casinos, there's never no problems because they've got more security. They have to be careful because of the age of people. You know, they can't let any funny business go around, you know, because I feel they watch it tighter and it's a tighter ship, you know. I mean, just everywhere I've been, I mean, heck, we've been, you know, one time we were in Ohio, we went over there and we went up to Belterra to go eat, and my son forgot his license, and I'm telling you, they knew exactly who he was, knew exactly what he did, everything, but they weren't having it. I mean, he didn't have it with him. They weren't getting in. So, I mean, I don't think, just because, you know, when they have the casino there and whatever, I mean, there's no talking your way in and doing. I mean, you got to follow the rules and the lines, and I don't think that's going to make anything bad. I think, if anything else, it's going to tighten the ship, you know?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. By the way, I forgot to ask you, when you're in Iowa and you're at that mixed meet, do you guys run quarter horses at all, or you stay thoroughbred all the way?
Nope. I have done quarter horses a couple of times when we didn't have, you know, a bigger stable or anything. And We did well, but no, now it's all straight thoroughbreds.
Okay, because I was wondering if Armando liked riding those.
Yeah, he does.
Looking and driving things.
Yeah, he's rode them before, and he's done well. And
it's
I always like to watch him.
He likes to be on the engine, doesn't he?
Yeah, I always like to watch him ride quarter horses because he always did real good at it. But no, he likes to ride the thoroughbreds. But every once in a while, when he wants to have a little fun, he'll ride one here and there.
Well, say hello to him for me, and thank you for being on the show, Kelly.
Thank you for having me.
The rest of the gang, we're going to check in on Fawner regularly because I'm hooked. I mean, that's like now on my bucket list of places to go.
Well, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure, and we will talk to you soon. And we're going to switch right over right now to Kim Weir from the TRF. Kim, good afternoon.
Well, happy Monday, Les. It's great to be here with
you. Same to you. How are things in Saratoga?
Well, I'm happy to say that we have had our first dose of spring, the real kind, where the sun is actually warm and not just shining. I was sitting outside in a short-sleeved shirt on my patio for about an hour last night. It was awesome. So things are good up
here. Very good. Finally, right?
Yeah, it took a while, but here we are.
Great. But you're real busy, so I don't want to hold you up too long today. But we've got a really interesting hero of the herd.
Oh, I love this opportunity to talk about our horses, Les. And yes, we chose a horse today, and he is our beloved Hurricane Sergio, who lives there in Ocala, Florida, at the herd at the Lowell Correctional Facility. But also used by our juvenile program that we spoke about the last couple times that I've been on with us. So Sergio is a special horse because he's teaching two sets of humans to learn new skills and to be better people as they go forward. So he's a real hero for the herd.
One of the things that really attracted me to him was he is, again, one of those prototypical horses that would have gotten lost in the shuffle if it wasn't for the TRF herd. One race, am I correct?
One race. I don't imagine we have a whole lot who have one race, but indeed, Sergio is special because he started one time in 2008. That was his whole career, old guy. Did you tell me that you think you know this horse from a past life, Les? Did you tell me that?
He was bred by the Sesses and was on their farm down in Davie when we used to board and swim horses there. The interesting thing about this horse, okay, and I've had a couple that fall in the same category, he went his whole entire career without passing an individual horse.
He
never passed anybody, but yet he's doing a great job 12 years later, 13 years later, and
He is a sweetheart. I love knowing that. I mean, I'm sure looking at his Turfway Park was his race on September 11th, 2008, and it was race 10, and it appears that he might have come in 10th. So thus the not passing a horse. But, you know, here's the thing. I just talked to, just this morning, because I knew we were chatting today, I called Velvet Salisbury, who's our superstar, amazing equine director, and I said, Velvet, I'm going to be speaking about our hero of the herd, Sergio, this morning. Tell me how he works with the boys in the program. And here's the connecting the dots. You know, these horses, they are who they are. And Sergio is a gentle giant, is what she told me. He is not the dominant horse in the herd. He gets bossed around by everybody. He's big, but he's timid. And, you know, that just as he was probably on the racetrack that day, he is not going to be fighting his way to the front, and he doesn't do that at Lowell either. But here's what's so magical, if I can just do this little highlight straight from Velvet.
Please.
Mouth to my ears and to your listeners. Sergio has this very special role, especially with the juveniles, in that he's the second horse that they get to interact with. The first horse is Fifth Angel, and we might talk about her another day, but she's just a love bug. She's, you know, a teddy bear. She loves every living creature, especially everything with two legs, probably because we feed her. So you can't do anything wrong with Fifth Angel, and she's the perfect first horse for these young men to interact with. But Sergio is the real teacher in the bunch because he's very sweet. He's very gentle, but he is a little bit of a scaredy cat, and he's not going to do it if you don't do it right. So she talked about the fact that everything she teaches the boys on Fifth Angel, his foolproof, they actually have to do it right to get Sergio, like to get him to put his head in the halter. You can't go throwing the halter around. You have to stand by his shoulder and open up the halter, and he'll put his head in. But if you do it wrong, he's just going to walk away. He's never going to be mean. He's just going to walk away. And he does that in the pasture when they try to catch him, and he does it in the stall. And so he's really, truly a teacher. And I just thought, my gosh, we are so lucky to have him. He's exactly in the spot he's meant to be. I'm sure he's played that same role with the women at Lowell, but that's what he's doing today. She was with him at the barn when I called Les. So that's my little hot off the presses story about our hero of the herd.
And we're going to have his picture up on the website later today. And now, is he available for sponsorship?
He certainly is. I think he'd be a wonderful sponsor horse because, again, that personality is the kind that when folks can visit him, he'll be a sweetie to visit. But he is on our sponsorship page, and we would love for Sergio. He's not going to exactly attract the fans who want a lot of money on him. He's going to attract the folks like you and me who just love him for being such a good boy and doing exactly what we ask of him with these young men and these women. So, yes, indeed, we'd love to get him some sponsors.
The nice thing about with one race, he didn't give a lot of people the opportunity to lose a lot of money on.
Oh, look at you, Mr.
So,
positive.
We're going to look at it in the positive. Now, how does somebody go about sponsoring Sergio?
Yep. So what will happen is I'll give you the page that you can post there, Les. But there's basically five options, and it's really just about what folks have in their resources and what they're comfortable with. But a gift of love is how you'd enter as a sponsor. That's a $100 gift, and it means that you are contributing to Sergio's cost of care in our herd, and you'll get a picture of him, you'll get updates. And the levels go up to $2,500. That's the four seasons friend, and essentially you can sort of figure that out. That means that a sponsor would be paying for all of Sergio's costs in our herd, which is $2,500 is our average cost per horse. So there's a couple levels in between. So there's lots of ways to be involved, but $100 gets you that ability to say, he's my horse in the herd, I'm helping him. And then the nice thing is you get updates, and our great sponsorship manager will send pictures throughout the year and give you that sense of connection. And again, he's really easy to reach because he's right there in Ocala, so we get lots of pictures of him.
Excellent. And so we'll have that link up on our site. But if not, you can go right to the trf.org site and find sponsorship for Serge. Kim,
yes.
What else do you have to tell us? Anything exciting going on in TRF world?
Well, you know, you're nice to ask, and I won't overstay my welcome, but we do actually have something today. We seem to always have something when I talk to you. You're my good luck charm.
You always have something every day.
Well, these horses, they keep me out of trouble anyway. So tonight, I will tell you and your listeners that tonight, if anybody's around their computer at about 6 o'clock Eastern time, we have this very fun little half-hour live stream event where we are having a virtual exhibit opening at the Aiken Thoroughbred Racing Hall of Fame and Museum in South Carolina. Has a whole exhibit dedicated to the TRF Second Chances program, our history, the program in South Carolina, and definitely a nod towards the juvenile program and the women's program in Florida. So it'll just be 30 minutes. It's right there on our website also, or Facebook or YouTube, and it's free, and you don't even have to RSVP. But we're excited, and we've got some very special guests who will be joining us. So I will leave you knowing that we'll make it worth it if you join us for 30 minutes tonight, Les. How's that?
And it gives me the opportunity to miss the local news. So that's good. That's great stuff.
Good
Kim,
stuff.
As
well,
always,
it is such a treat. Thank you.
A pleasure to have you on board, and we will talk to you very soon. And, folks, we enjoyed having you with us today and our friends from Fauner Park, and we'll see you all very soon.
Take care.
The finest care for your horses in a quite relaxed natural environment. That's what you will get at Bally Rose Farm in South Florida. Customized feed, therapy, and turnout programs ensure that every horse gets the attention they need and deserve.
With more than 35 years of professional experience, the Ballyrose team works hard for you and your horses and is known for its client communications. Turnouts, breeding stock or layup, Ballyrose is your best choice. Visit ballyrose.com or call 561-774-5200.